everyone. Well, welcome to Stutter Talk at episode 720 for May 18th, 2023. I am Peter Reitzis, president and host of Stutter Talk, and I'm here today with fellow Stutter Talk host, Dr. Chris Constantino. Hey, Chris.
Hi, Peter. I like Dr. Fur.
Dr. Fur, I'll leave that in. Chris is an assistant professor at Florida State University. Chris and I are both people who stutter, and we are both speech language pathologists. So, Chris, last weekend was my son's bar mitzvah, which is when a 13-year-old Jewish boy or girl becomes, in our faith, a man or a woman. And then followed the bar mitzvah was my niece's bat mitzvah. So we all live in North Carolina. And so we had lots of out-of-town guests. We had lunches and dinners and families and house guests. And it was 4 days of talking, events, and joy. And as you might imagine, some stuttering stuff came up. So at the bar and bat mitzvahs, I was called upon twice to address the congregations, but both times I had not been prepared that I would be speaking. So do you mind if I tell you about these two fine experiences?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And congratulations on your son's bar mitzvah.
Thank you so much. These were beautiful events, and I was so thankful to see people. And, you know, I'm just going to jump in here. We had family coming in from out of town, family that I know well, and family that I rarely see, and who never knew me as a person who stutters. So they certainly were around when I was passing as fluent and doing my best to hide stuttering. And I don't know if you've ever had that experience where you're with people who care about you and you care about them, and they were not any part of your stuttering growth and change. Do you kind of know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think those are usually, as you're describing, people from maybe when we were younger, or people who met us after we've sort of went through some of our more difficult times.
Yeah, so it brings up a lot of things. And so I'm in synagogue, and I'm hearing all of these beautiful melodies sung by the congregation, sung by my son, sung by my niece. And it's reminding me of being a child. And it's all these. So here I'm sitting with relatives dressed up in synagogue. And sometimes it's like, where am I? Am I in the present? Am I in the past? Because you're hearing these melodies that have been with you your entire life. And you look over and you see an aunt and an uncle who you only see every 10 or 15 years. The first thing that came up was I'm at my son's bar mitzvah, and the rabbi says, and now we'll hear from the father. And I looked at my wife and I said, oh, I guess we're going to hear from the father now. And my immediate thought was, I need to be funny right now because I looked very surprised. And everybody laughed. And I'm really proud that I was able to compose myself enough to realize I don't have a speech plan, but I better say something. So I chose funny. And something about being around people who stutter and seeing so many people cope with stuttering gave me that experience and that knowledge to know that sometimes being funny is a good start. So that's where I started. Did you ever use humor when you're using public speaking to help you cope with stuttering and fear of talking?
I think I usually use, I don't know what the word would be, but maybe authenticity. And I don't mean that in like a, I just try to be as transparent with what I'm feeling as possible. And I find that that's often endearing to people. And therefore, if I'm struggling, if I'm stuttering, they tend to show a lot of grace and patience. But I think part of that is sense of humor, in that I often find my stuttering funny, especially like if you're speaking publicly or in a situation where people are expecting a certain timing, your stuttering, my stuttering can sometimes throw people off. And I find the mistimings humorous. And so I think if we can find humor in our stuttering, often other people do too. And I think that that's very disarming for them and almost lets them in, right? Lets them understand how they're supposed to be feeling. Because I think that's often where a lot of their discomfort comes from, is they don't know what the appropriate emotion to have when you're stuttering is.
Those are great points. And maybe instead of saying I was trying to be funny, I should follow your lead and say I was trying to be authentic. Because when I engage in public speaking, I like it there to be a back and forth. I don't want it to be stiff. I want it to be light at times, because sometimes you're getting into serious topics. So perhaps my authentic self that I've discovered through facing my stuttering is that throwing in humor is fun. And I was really touched in the moment because people had shown up who I wasn't expecting. And there were people in the room who had really supported my son, which really supports my family. So I thanked a bunch of people, and I was smart enough in the moment to say, you always forget somebody, so I'm really sorry if I forgot you. And I was starting to move back, and the rabbi started the next prayer, and my stomach dropped. And I tapped the rabbi just as he was starting the prayer, and I said, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Rabbi, but I need to thank the most important person. I need to thank my wonderful wife. And everybody laughed, and someone yelled, good save, right, sis? and I'm sharing all this because growing up, I didn't have composure when public speaking. And, you know, we've said so many times on Stutter Talk, stuttering is a gift. And at the bar mitzvah, it ran through my mind that stuttering is a mitzvah. It's a good deed. Something about dealing with all those terrible, terrible stuttering years composed me in that moment to be ready for the unexpected. And I think I reached the moment and I didn't rush. And even though the speech I gave was only, let's say, 30 or 40 seconds, I spoke in a way that I hope was engaging and sincere and showed how proud I was of my son and our family and all the people who came to support us. So I know you read the liturgy at church, and I know that we have talked before about stuttering as a gift. So take it, or now I'm adding stuttering as a mitzvah. So take it where you will.
Yeah. The composure you're describing, I think, is earned, right? I remember like really struggling to give, say, class presentations or public speaking in front of groups, and having this feeling like if I could only get these words out, that this situation would be the easiest situation in the world, right? If I wasn't so concerned with my stuttering, if speech wasn't so effortful, I don't see what about the situation would be difficult. And as my speech changed over the years, I actually realized that that wasn't true, my speech getting easier did not necessarily make me a good public speaker. I actually had to have something to say. But it made me not care about so much about what the audience was thinking. Having survived myriad public group presentations where I was just in a really dark, hard place, the only way I could get through those was by not worrying about what the audience was thinking about. And so I think that composure comes from sort of learning what's valuable, right? And what's valuable is what we were just talking about, right? Like sharing yourself with the audience, right? Having this sort of authentic sense of communion with the people that you're talking to. And yeah, you mentioned that I do the readings at my parish, usually for Sunday Mass, but I also do weekday masses. And part of the reason I do that is, almost like self-therapy related. Part of the reason is that I really enjoy participating in the liturgy. I feel that for so long, my voice had been a source of conflict for me, a source of trouble. And there's some great irony that God would use my voice as his own, right? To proclaim his word. And there's something really special about that that I enjoy. However, I also do it because oftentimes I'm talking to strangers. I'm talking to people who don't know me from Adam. They're not expecting me to stutter. They're expecting somebody to read the readings clearly and fluently. And so it's a situation in which I find myself sort of fighting battles that in most other areas of my life are over. I don't experience those conflicts like that anymore. I have all these old anxieties, all these old anticipations that come back up as I feel this intense pressure to be fluent. I feel myself tempted to use old avoidance behaviors, old escape devices. I start stuttering and I want to stop immediately. And so it's like as I've gotten older, I've had to seek out these last vestiges of my old stuttering patterns so that I could continue to try to minimize my avoidances and maximize my ability to let myself stutter even in those situations.
You've put so much on the table. I want to ask you more about your participation with the liturgy. But you mentioned these old avoidance and escape behaviors that you're grappling with. And I just experienced that. And it's like I'm in a time machine. So at my niece's bat mitzvah, I'm sitting there thinking my work is done. we got my son through it, and now it's 2 days later, and it's a lot of the same people. And right before the service begins, the rabbi, who I don't know because he's not my rabbi, comes over and says, "Are you Mr. Wright?" Says, "Okay, here's the prayer that you'll be saying today." I looked at my sister-in-law and I said, "You might have told me I was saying a prayer today." And it was number 14. So there is going to be at least 14 people speaking on the Bima in front of everybody before me. So as a person who stutters, you know, you've got a lot of time to worry. So I start to look at the prayer I'm going to have to say, and immediately I start anticipating what words I'm going to stutter on, and I start thinking of avoidances, and then I immediately catch myself and I say, like, what am I doing? This isn't 1984. This isn't 1986. This isn't 1995. I don't have to respond the way I've always responded. And so I stopped looking at the prayer, which of course deprived me of preparation. But in this case, it was good because I wanted to stop worrying about stuttering. It sounds like you experience sometimes similar things.
Yeah. And especially when I was still, I would say about 10 years ago, I remember like going home after having been away, living in other cities, living in other areas of the country, going home and talking, as you were mentioning earlier, like talking to those aunts and uncles who you only see once every 10 years, going home and talking to people in my neighborhood that I lived in growing up, or talking to my old friends' parents, or just talking to people who, you know, I don't keep in touch with. I only see them periodically when I visit home, were always difficult speaking times, because as you say, it was like my mouth was in a time machine, right? Like all these old ways of speaking, ways of approaching stuttering that I almost was out of practice in dealing with because they didn't come up much anymore, would just reassert themselves. And I'd find myself feeling like, oh, I thought I had already won that fight, right? I thought I had already won that battle. Why am I doing that again? So yeah, I can relate to that very much.
I mean, it's like, so I am home, but it's kind of like home came to me, you know, like all the old stuttering stuff came to me. And I did for a moment, I had a fleeting thought, and I know I'm not the first to have this thought, where if I would have gone into, like, I don't believe in hypnosis, but if I would have gone into these events not knowing that I stutter, what would that have been like? Because I was worrying about stuttering, where I actually felt in the moment I was creating stuttering.
Yeah, I often feel that way. And I think I've tried to explain that using, and I don't have like strong research support for this. This is speculation to all the listeners out there. That there's, and I may have talked about this on Stutter Talk before, but there's a really great body of literature from sports science about what, in some sports they call it choking, and in other sports they call it the yips, where you take a well-learned, complicated motor pattern, and if you think about it too much, your performance decreases quite significantly, because you're using, when you're thinking about it consciously, you're using your working memory system, which has much less resources than your implicit ability to perform the activity. And my speculation is that when we anticipate stuttering, we actually do make our stuttering worse, in that we're trying to speak using that conscious control system versus a implicit control system. And it's inherently less powerful. It's less able to handle how complex speaking is.
Real quick, could that conscious control system include trying not to stutter, or are you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Cause you're anticipating, right? And so you're trying to either handle the stutters that show up with a certain way, or avoid stutters completely, right? And so you're taking speech, which is probably best performed automatically, and you're trying to perform it manually.
That makes so much sense. And I don't want to get too far away from our conversation about the liturgy. So when you do speak to your church or to other churches, are you going in with a plan related to stuttering, or are you going in saying, I'm just going to handle this moment however it comes up?
My plan, well, almost yes to both of those. My plan is to think about stuttering as little as possible. And so I know I will think about it, because it's one of the few places I still do. Right. And so I anticipate anticipation. But when I step up to the podium, my goal is to try to read this as I would if I was a fluent speaker. And so what I mean by that is like the experience you were describing, right? If I find myself changing my cadence, slowing down, anticipating stutters, trying to smooth out potential moments of disfluency, I inevitably feel like I'm stuttering more. If I start stuttering and I stop, inevitably that stutter and future stutters will feel more tense. And so my goal is to read this passage without thought to stuttering. If I do stutter, let that stutter come as much as possible. Let it out, lean into it. Don't try to suppress it or back out of it or escape from it. So my plan is almost to, I mean, I guess that constitutes a plan, but it, cause it's very much on my mind. It's one of the few places where stuttering is still on my mind. But the plan is to try to let what's going to happen happen without me getting my conscious mind involved as much as possible.
This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitzes here with Dr. Chris Constantino. Chris, it's so interesting because there's so many productive and different ways to approach this. Tomorrow I have a meeting and I might be called upon to speak in front of 75 people. And I thought today on my drive home to do this podcast, if that happens, my general plan will be to let out a few overt stutters, to stutter on purpose, and to stutter in a forward moving way. And it would be just this, to me, a simple plan to let everyone in on the fact that I might speak a little differently, and to let myself, to remind myself that it's okay to stutter. And you know, the older Peter, like 20 years ago, would have had a plan to have stuttered really hard. A good reason for that is because that might actually happen. At this point in my life, that likely won't happen. So I sort of toned it down a little bit, but I still use that, put my stuttering out there so I'm not standing up here trying to avoid it. So I just find it interesting that we both seem to have very reasonable plans, but they are different.
Yeah, I do use voluntary stuttering occasionally still. Because my plan is to try to, is usually to try to not think about speech as much as possible. Sometimes voluntary stuttering is thinking about speech more than I want. However, if I do use it, like throwing in a couple of voluntary stutters at the start and then forgetting about it can be a really nice way to show your audience what to expect and give yourself more permission to stutter. So I'm not opposed to that.
So switching gears just a little bit, I was so proud of my son, and he prepared for the bar mitzvah for almost a year, and he had a bar mitzvah speech that he worked on, and I was brought in at the end to help him edit it, but he chose his topic with the rabbi. I had nothing to do with this topic, and his topic was essentially wanting to tell everyone there that he is autistic, and there are different types of autism, and how it's important to him that we don't consider all autistic people the same. And I was so proud of him, and it was not my topic. And I was proud of the way we're raising him, because, and it's not just us, it's the people around him, the teachers, the other students he knows with special needs, that
this was kind of unheard of when I was a kid. I can't imagine having my bar mitzvah and standing up there and talking openly about stuttering. It wasn't an option.
Right. What was going through your head about stuttering during your bar mitzvah?
My son asked me that.
No, like, yeah, at yours when you were his age.
Yeah, my son asked me that.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. And I don't remember. Oh. I just don't remember. It was a tough time, and I was trying to duck and cover and get through it. And I am just amazed. When people say the world hasn't changed, it's changed. I remember having learning disabilities and stuttering, and synagogue was really hard. And there's just so much more tolerance for neurodiverse people everywhere. And I see it as a parent. So on the Sabbath, Jews we're not supposed to write. And one of the ways my son has gotten through dozens and dozens of services in his life is he brings a little sketch pad. And if he sits next to me with a sketch pad, he can get through a 1-2 hour service with some breaks. And when I was a kid, that would not have been an option because you do not write on the Sabbath. But now it's an option. And I can remember one year bringing some coloring books when he was 5 or 6, because I wanted him to attend the high holidays with me. And other parents started sending their kids over, and because, children with attention deficit, children of trouble. And pretty soon I had a group of 3-4 children at my feet, quietly coloring, getting through the service. And that just, I have no memories of anything like that from when I was a kid.
Well, it's beautiful that your son was able to experience his bar mitzvah in a way that allowed him to be more him, right? I imagine that that's, I'm not Jewish, but I imagine that pretending to be somebody else at this very important life event is less satisfying than being able to be more fully you.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautifully said, Chris. I totally agree. This might be the first. So, how when we talk about advertising stuttering, one of the things you hear from folks is, I don't want to talk openly about my stuttering. I don't want to announce to people, hey, I'm a stutterer, because it takes attention off of the topic at hand. But in this situation, I did feel that. I felt one of the tools I have in life is to just say, hey, by the way, I speak with a stutter, or I stutter, or I'm a stutterer. But I'm not going to do that at my son's bar mitzvah because I don't want the focus to be on me. And I know he's got a speech coming up on being open about being autistic, and I don't want to steal his thunder. So, I've never had that experience before where I know somebody's coming after me who's going to talk about their disability. So I'd better not talk about my disability. It was just like, this was all joyful. Like, there was no worry here. One of my tools was off the shelf, and it was just kind of beautiful.
Yeah. Your son, I'm trying to ask this in a way that gives credit where credit's due. I could imagine this being two different ways. One is, this was a tremendous act of bravery on the part of your son. Or two, the environment was so supportive that actually this was sort of a natural response to that support. I imagine it was maybe a little bit of both.
I'm going to ask him. My gut is to ask him, But my gut was he has been raised not just by us, but by those around him, by his teachers, by his peers. He has been raised that being autistic, I can't speak for him, but I dare say it's normal.
To see how you are as normal and acceptable is, I think, something that we would want all people to feel, right? That even if it's something you struggle with, and even if it's something that you would like to work on or change, to start from a place of the status quo is okay. I can maybe do some things differently, but like the status quo is acceptable is a tremendous place to start at.
It sure is. And I'm curious what you think, and it's certainly okay if we disagree, but do you, you're a little younger than I am, but do you also see these shifts going on where I'm sure they're still teasing and I'm sure they're still bullying, but things are getting better in regards to being a child with disabilities?
So I'm thinking of my experiences. So my children are still too young to give me like an eye into what's happening with their peer group. But if I think about my current clients who are younger, or even my experiences when I was working as a school SLP, it feels like things are changing. More and more people are talking about stuff like neurodiversity and accommodating disabilities and ableism, and all these things don't take away like the embodied difficulties. Like, it doesn't necessarily make getting stuck while you're talking less frustrating, but it takes
agreed. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
But it takes away a lot of the other stuff. Not completely. I don't think it's been like a full 180, but I remember I would have groups when I worked in the schools of children who stuttered, who would work together in like groups of 3, 4, 5. And their attitudes about it, even if they were covert, right? It wasn't, even if they were still dealing with their own things, their own shame or discomfort around stuttering, their attitude about it seemed so much more open and understanding than my attitude ever was when I was their age. They seemed to be able to talk about it at a higher level than I remember understanding my own stuttering. And I've seen children like stand up for each other in ways that I don't remember. There's an understanding that like making fun of stuttering is not a cool thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm experiencing these things too. And I truly hope it's as we perceive them that things are getting better. I want to touch upon one last topic, but I actually want to call myself out about something, because I said there's more tolerance towards autism and people with disabilities. And then I thought about the word tolerance, and it's kind of an awful word. Like, and here's what I mean. Like, do we have to tolerate people with autism because they're part of our community, right? So I'm even catching myself here. Like, it's not a bad word. I shouldn't have said it. It's an awful word, but you kind of see my point. Like, we shouldn't
be tolerating. We're not just tolerating them. We should be loving them and wanting them.
Yes.
Desiring them. Yeah.
Yes. So I need to think sometimes about the words I use. So I'm going to call myself out on that, Chris. And I want to say quickly, I loved what you were saying about the stuttering yip, stuttering choking, to bring in a term from chess, perhaps a stuttering blunder, although I don't know if that's taking it too far. Yes, but so maybe I could get you back on the show at some point to talk about these ideas of this idea of the stuttering yips in more detail. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the last topic that I want to mention is the overall pacing of speaking at synagogue. And I assume it's the same for church. So when I was speaking to both congregations, of course, I spoke after hearing the rabbi. And the rabbi is speaking with a lot of natural pauses, much like a James Earl Jones. And I'm trying to show a little bit of that right now. And that was one of the ways that I worked to reduce my stuttering. So as listeners know, I've used tons of voluntary stuttering, but I've also used a lot of rate control to reduce the frequency of my stuttering. And sitting there at these two congregations, speaker after speaker barreled through what they had to say. They were speaking too fast. They weren't enunciating. It was hard to hear them, and they don't stutter. And at the second service at my niece's bat mitzvah, the microphone broke. And every speaker comes up and fiddles with the microphone and tries to get the microphone to work, and it's not working. And then they're not projecting loud enough for people to hear them, and they're speaking too fast when they need to be speaking slower and louder. And something about going through speech therapy and being part of the stuttering community really prepared me for that moment. And I actually had people come up to me and say things like, "You were the only one we could hear," or "We could understand what you were saying." And, you know, getting back to the mitzvah of stuttering, you know, I feel like stuttering has helped me in those ways. And I have all the stuttering scars and, you know, I dare say decades of challenges, but that's one of the things that I've learned is communicating effectively when I need to. Thoughts or comments, Chris?
Yeah, when reading at church, I think it's almost impossible to read too slowly. That actually the challenge is they like we almost have like no conception of how fast we're talking. And it'll feel like you're reading too slow, but you're actually reading too fast, right? And so it should feel excruciatingly slow to you. And I think there's probably some fluency-inducing effect to that, I would imagine. But I think more so, because I've had the experience too that people will come up to me after Mass and say, like, "I love when you read. You're my favorite reader. You're the only person I can understand. You know, that everybody else just sounds like they're mumbling or they're reading too quickly." And I think more so than slowing down being fluency inducing, it's that I've had decades of experience like fighting with my urge to speak differently, right? That fighting the urge to hide your stutter is a very similar feeling to fighting the urge to speak faster, right? Or feeling pressure to not stutter is very similar to feeling pressure like I'm speaking too slow. And so the ability to get in front of an audience and say, regardless of how I feel, I am going to speak this way, is a skill I think I learned from learning to stutter openly, from learning to say that I've made a choice and I'm going to choose to stutter like this. When I'm reading, it's like saying I've made a choice, and no matter how crazy it feels to read this slowly, I'm going to keep it at this pace. I'm going to stay here. Despite this pressure that I feel. And so it's almost like stuttering was, and resisting the urge to escape from a moment of stuttering, or to hide a moment of stuttering, or to postpone a moment of stuttering, was practice for resisting other speaking pressures.
I am a bit at a loss for words. It's sort of amazing to me how we've learned so much from these experiences, yet our experiences are a little bit different. And I'm going to have to listen back closely to all the things that you just shared. And I'm wondering, so, and the people listening to you have no idea any of this is going on, and they just hear somebody communicating in an effective manner, and I don't know if you're stuttering or not.
Well, that's the I've often said this to my wife, because I do speak slowly when I read. I try to read very slowly. However, I'm also stuttering a little bit, and that slows me down. Right. And because the stutters are usually small and short, but they can be frequent. And so they'll often come out, because I'm reading so slowly, they'll often come out as these little catches or pauses on my words. And I've often wondered, do they like my reading because I'm reading slowly, or do they like my reading because my actual stuttering is making it better for them, right? That it has nothing to do with my conscious effort to read slowly, and the way my stuttering is sounding is somehow facilitative to their listening.
Well, I'm not there, so I don't know, but I imagine it could be both.
I would hope so. I think it'd be really cool if it was.
And at the risk of sounding snotty, it seems that most of the public speakers I experience who are not professional speakers are not very engaging. And you've had a lot of experience with being engaging. So I imagine it's at least you're engaging, and maybe also that you're stuttering. And that you're clear. I don't mean clear and not stuttering, but you are speaking to them in a way that they can process what you're saying. I mean, I'm having a little trouble processing what you're saying now, because you're throwing so many great ideas at me. So I'm going to have to go back and process again.
It would be really neat though if this thing I had tried to erase from my speech, or not really erase from my speech, because I could never really hide it, but it would almost prevent me from speaking, right? It would keep me quiet. It would just make me censor myself. But if it turned out that not only does letting my stuttering out make talking easier for me, but if it actually makes listening easier for my speaker, that would just be a pretty serendipitous.
Amazing. And here's where I want to end it, Chris. This to me gets all back to the classic, going back to 2007 when Stutter Talk first started, the classic Stutter Talk question: is stuttering a gift? I've tried to update that a little bit to say, is stuttering a mitzvah, a good deed? I will have to say, from my perspective, it sounds like we're both saying that stuttering on some level is a gift or a mitzvah or both. Is that too simple? Or is it time to retire these ideas? Or can we still say that there's a gift in stuttering?
I think there's definitely a gift in stuttering, right? I the way I often phrase it is, what do we gain from stuttering, right? Like, what experiences do we have because we stutter that we wouldn't have if we were fluent? And a lot of those experiences we might not want to have, right? Many of those experiences were negative. But like we're describing, clearly some of those experiences are positive, right? And so there's certainly things to be gained by stuttering.
And here's where we'll end it. I was going to tell you this off air. I'll tell you on air. We did an episode where you were the featured guest talking about what we gain from stuttering. And that is one of the most popular Stutter Talk episodes ever. So people want to hear about
that. That's really neat. Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah. People want to hear about this. I think the stuttering gain episode 714. Yeah. Episode 714, Stuttering Gain and the Stuttering Advantage, is one of our most popular episodes in recent years. So folks want to hear from you on this, Chris.
Thank you, Peter.